بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ومن كل شيء خلقنا زوجين لعلكم تذكرون. Allah Ta'ala has created this world in diversity. If there is the earth, then there is the heaven. If there are malaika that are spirited only to do good and virtue, then there are shaitan that are spirited only to do evil. So there is virtue, then there is vice. If there is tolerance, then there is aggression. If there is adversity, then there is prosperity. If there is sickness, then there is good health. So when we look all around, then this is the very nature of this creation, that there is diversity. Right? And this diversity is not from today, it was from the day this earth started. The incident of Habil and Qabil, we are quite well acquainted. From the day it started, then there was this diversity. Now, we have a multiple problem before us. One problem is to be able to recognize and identify the wrong, right? So that is the one task, one challenge, must be able to identify the wrong. And becomes a challenge in this day on account of the abundance of evil. لا يستوي الخبيث والطيب ولو أعجبك كثرة الخبيث. That wrong and right, purity and impurity cannot be the same, though the abundance of wrong may dazzle you, may amaze you, so much of wrong. And then when the wrong reaches a certain limit, then many a times many unwary people are confused and confounded, that is this right or not right? Like one simple straightforward thing is a premarital relationship, right? But because of the abundance of this crime, a premarital relationship, people think there's nothing wrong in it. As long as they are in an engagement, there is a proposal in place, so the parents will give the blessings to the daughter to go and date with her fiancé. Now, where has this come up? Came up from this point where there was an abundance of this evil. So when there was an abundance of this evil, some parents began to feel that it is right perhaps. And some parents began to feel that it's not so bad. It's bad, but not so bad. So when this culture of not so bad starts off, then anything will fit into it. Anything will fit in that culture. It's all right. It's not so bad. It's good. It's not right, but not so bad. So you can fit anything and everything into this culture of not so bad. Now, in a premarital relationship now, sometimes you've got a casual conversation. Then you've got an informal talk that's going on. Sometimes they're going out for the day, going out to have tea or coffee at some restaurant, right? So all this thing is happening. And the parents don't feel anything about it. They will give the child their blessing by go out. But don't get yourself messed up. Just come clean again. But that's the only cautionary note they've given to this child of theirs. And they don't know really what they are doing. What they're doing and what will they do. And if they didn't have anything intimate, they feel it's all right so long as they didn't have anything intimate. Now, what are they giving their blessings to? Is it halal or it is haram? Is it haram? So sometimes with the abundance of evil, then the right is misconstrued as wrong, and the wrong is misconstrued as right. A simple example for the right to be misconstrued as wrong, right? Now, there is a dawat, an invitation, right? To accept an invitation is a sunnah. But more or less your gut feeling is, you know that there's going to be a mixed gathering there. Integration, no segregation. There's going to be music that's going to be blasting. There's going to be photography. Now you see three vices taking place at one and the same venue, but then you think to yourself, you know, I don't want to break up relationship. Now there is some ikhtilaf there is some difference of opinion about some issues, but really I don't want to break up any relationship. I don't want to offend anybody. But the point to note is, you don't want to offend anybody, but you want to offend Allah Ta'ala. That's alright that you offend Allah Ta'ala, that's alright. But you offend anybody else, that is intolerable, that I don't want to offend him. But what about you offending Allah Ta'ala? Did you think for a moment, okay, in this you're going to be offending Allah Ta'ala, so you didn't think much about it. You know? One person is complaining this morning, you know. He says, someone came up to him and he says that, see, I've taken a loan from a certain person, 10 million rand for example, I've taken from him, but he's got no legal documentation. When he's not legally documented, then I'm not legally bound to pay the person. So is my reasoning right? That I'm not legally bound to pay the person because there's no legal documentation, nothing to prove. He can't claim that really I do owe him that amount of money. So what do you think about it? You see, where has this person gone wrong? He has gone wrong in a very simple language, where he's gone wrong. He's gone wrong at this point where he has deleted Allah Ta'ala, na'uzu billah. And what became his God? The legal system became his God. The judicial has become his God. The legal system has become his God. The police has become his God. Anything that is to do with the law, that became his God. When I say that became his God, now look, when it is legally related, then how particular that person will be, how careful, how cautious he will be. If, for example, you are tipped off from some very reliable person, and you see that uplang that you have got in this place, in that place, and the SARS has caught up with you, they know about it, and tomorrow morning at about 9 o'clock they're going to be at your door. I ask you, any person that is a little bit calm and cool-headed, will he be able to sleep that night? Even if I say it's just got 1 million rand, somewhere stashed up somewhere, and someone is just tipped off the SARS, that he's got some type of uplang there, his business is not right, and even though it is a rumor, it's not a truth, it's not truthful, it's just a rumor, but I ask you, will you be able to sleep comfortably for that night? The whole night will be tossing and turning. But how must I cover myself? If they come, what must I say? And where must I stash this money? What can I do about it? And who must have been the person who tipped off the police or the SARS that I've got this type of wealth? Yeah, it's my opposition, my competitor, he went and spied off. And all these type of thoughts will run through your mind. The whole morning will come out, but you will not be able to sleep for that minute. For a minute you will not be able to sleep with peace and ease. What was the reason? The reason was the judicial system became the God. The police became the Lord God. The law became the God. The legal system became the God. But I tell you, you know what? You're not going to perform your Isha Namaz, then this is how you're going to be punished. You don't do your zakat, then this is how Allah Ta'ala will punish you. You can still relax. Allah Pak is still Ghafoor Rahim. He will sort out my problem. He will work out a plan for me. But you can still relax. So, as though that whole Godhood has moved from Allah Ta'ala to the law. Do it by the book. Don't you encroach the law. Don't you get legally implicated. Don't do anything wrong. So that became the God. Allah Ta'ala is forgotten. So this is the root of the problem, where Allah Ta'ala became secondary and these things became primary. Primary. This became the base. This became your concern. Concern is this, whatever happens, but legally I mustn't get implicated. The God has changed. Although you say you believe in Allah Ta'ala, but your practice, your behavior shows that you believe in something else. It's not so much of the belief in Allah Ta'ala, it's the belief in the system, it's the belief of the clout that the law has, it's the belief of the power of the police, it's the belief of the might of the law and the legal system. See, this is your belief. And Allah Pak will, one of those things may happen, may not happen, Allah will forgive, man. Allah Pak is Ghafoor Rahim, He will forgive. See how your belief, how you get confused on account of the abundance of evil. You begin to consider that evil to be right. The right to be wrong and the wrong to be right. You can say a simple thing like a da'wah, an invitation. The normal person, the average person, what is his concern? Is his concern that I'm offending Allah Ta'ala or not? Or is his concern I'm offending my friend? Doing something, whatever it was, whatever it is, but in whatever he is doing, what is his primary concern? That is he offending Allah Ta'ala or is he offending people? That becomes the primary concern. In the words of Hazrat Ji Rahmatullahi, ye dil shikasti ki fikr hai, lekin deen shikasti ki fikr hai ya nahi. You are concerned about breaking someone's heart, but you're not concerned about breaking deen. That's not a concern at all. It's not a thing to be concerned about. Well, one of those things, deen is not such an expensive thing that I must be concerned about it. See where your mind takes you. From one end right to the other it takes you. So nonetheless, Allah Ta'ala has created this entire system with diversity. And in this diversity now you need to do two things. One is to identify the right from the wrong. Man can still sleep. He's got so much of interest accumulated or so much of interest to pay, but he can still sleep, he can still relax. He doesn't realize that the curse of Allah Ta'ala is raining on him. He can sleep, he can relax, no problem, it's alright. But the saas is after him. That will make him feel sleepless. That makes him feel restless. But this, that curse of Allah Ta'ala is raining upon him, that keeps him relaxed. لَعَنَ اللَّهُ النَّازِيرَ وَالْمَنْزُورَ Right? The hadith says, Allah Ta'ala's curse been upon the man that looks at haram. Right? And the haram that is being viewed, one is the person that is looking at the haram. And the haram that is being viewed, that also becomes a subject of the curse of Allah Ta'ala. Now look, if you are going to be, cameraing or videoing any type of get together, right? There'll be women there, there'll be women there, right? Everything is being cameraed, everything is being viewed. Now, there's hundreds of people that are viewing the video. When they are viewing that video, then you cannot say that everybody that is looking at that girl is looking innocently. There may be about 100 people that are innocent, but there may be 500 people that are guilty about it. The same will happen if you turn it around, it's a man that is being videoed and a woman is watching. There'll be some woman that will be innocent, they won't be having any type of a dirty glance. But can you rule it out that there are women that are not giving a dirty glance? And then do you come within the ambit of this hadith, لَعَنَ اللَّهُ النَّازِيرَ وَالْمَنْزُورُ that Allah Ta'ala's curse be upon the person that is viewing as well as the person that is being viewed. Do you come under the ambit of this hadith or not? Now that the curse of Allah Ta'ala is raining, it's alright, that's not a problem. But that saas being behind me, that I can't stomach, I can't see that. That curse I can't take. This curse I can take it. That curse I can manage it. This curse I can't manage it. See our change, how our thinking, our reasoning, how it shifts, how it moves away. Our Buzugana Deen's thinking was totally different. Other Shaykh al-Hind, Wana Hussain Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi, had accompanied his Shaykh, at least was accompanied by his student, Wana Hussain Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullahi, when he was taken as prisoner and being moved to Malta. Now he's seated in a yacht that is propelled by the wind and he's left on the open. And it's winter and all the cold is getting onto him. He's over 75, 80, nearly 80 at the time, and he's moving under that circumstance. So the student, Hussain Ahmad Madani Sahib Rahmatullah, he's still young. He can weather the storm, he can endure all these conditions. So when he saw what his ustad was going through, the saint of the time, for whom Muhammad Thami Sahib Rahmatullah used to say that I get very upset with people who say that it is Shaykhul Hind, he's supposed to say it's Shaykhul Alam, right? He's such a dynamic personality, and they've reduced him to Shaykhul Hind. He is Shaykh al-Alam, the Shaykh of the world, such a person he is. So he cried, and he says, at this advanced age, for no fault of yours, and you've been taken as a prisoner with all this disgrace, and then with all that weather conditions. So he smiled, the sheikh smiles, and he says the statement. That statement is supposed to be written in gold, in our hearts more than on the walls, right? He says, Alhamdulillah, ba musibat giriftarim, na ba ma'asiyat. Alhamdulillah, I can be caught up in some misfortune, right? Some sickness, some ailment, I'm gripped in the arms of an ailment, of a sickness, not in the transgression of Allah Ta'ala. Had Allah Ta'ala willed, I would have been gripped in the jaws of a crime, in the jaws of a sin. Allah Pak hasn't gripped me in the jaws of a crime. He's gripped me in the jaws of some calamity, some musibah, some difficulty. So that is no, not so bad. This would have been terrible. Imagine if Allah Ta'ala had put you into some other crime, you in interest, you in zina, or you in gambling, or your dealings are not right, fraudulent dealings you are involved in, or you're looking at women with the wrong type of intentions, right? Or you're looking at videos and the wrong type of things you are looking at, right? Now imagine if Allah Ta'ala had put me into that, what a serious predicament I would have been. Yeah, Allah Pak saved me from all this. He's put me into some type of a difficulty. It's not a problem. As long as Allah Ta'ala is not, Allah Ta'ala is not displeased, it's alright. If Allah Pak is not displeased, it's not a problem. This thing will come and it will pass. The most that can happen is death. But I know that Allah Ta'ala is not displeased. So what is that a problem? So now our concern, what's our concern? Material, physical. That becomes a concern. According to this problem here, this difficulty. But when we grip in some type of a spiritual wrong, we don't think much about it. Interest, fraud, haram, music, everything can go. But we mustn't be caught in anything that is material or physical. That becomes a real problem. This becomes a side issue, one of those things that we can endure. So his statement, I say, is supposed to be written in the heart more than written on the frame on the wall. Alhamdulillah, ba musibat giriftarim, na ba ma'asiyat. I've been caught up in some problem, some difficulty, a physical ailment or a physical thing I'm caught up in, but I'm not caught up in anything that was spiritual. I'm not in the curse of Allah Ta'ala. I'm not being rained with His wrath and His anger. In that respect, I'm safe. This year, it will come and it's gone. One of those things. Most will happen, be physically hurt, emotionally hurt. That's nothing can happen more than that. Nothing can happen more than that. So, you see, one is deen shikasti, and one is dil shikasti. We are concerned about someone's heart. But are you concerned about deen, that I'm going to hurt deen? I'm going to offend deen. I'm going to break deen. Breaking the heart we are too concerned about. But breaking deen is alright. We feel that we can break it, we can make it up again. But break that heart, we can't break up that heart. So our whole concern is about people. So people became the God more than Allah Ta'ala. More than deen being the goal, now people became the God. It is the thing that we begin to worship. It is the thing that we begin to adore. It is the thing that we bow down before. Nonetheless, what I started off with is this diversity that Allah Pak has created, this entire system. So one job will be to identify the wrong, to know what is wrong. Because the essence of ibadat is to abstain from wrong. Anything that is doubtful, wrong, that is the essence of ibadat. Azadji Rahmatullah used to give an illustration of the essence of ibadat. One is a person that is ailing, sickly, eyes is not right, his back is hunched, can't walk properly, he needs a walker. He's got cancer, he's got sugar, he's got a heart. He's got every problem he's got. He can't walk properly, he's got gangrene, his foot is being amputated, everything, right? Feet is being amputated, he can't eat well, he has to take an insulin every now and then, and he's going for dialysis, right? Now, such a person, you put an eyes, dress on a nice clothing, a three-piece suit, R1,000,000, and then you got him adorned with silver and gold, the best type of rubies and pearls, right? Now, do you think it's the right thing, the sensible thing to do? And does it look right on that person? He's in such a sickly state, and you have adorned him with pearls, with diamond, with gold and ruby and all that. such a beautiful three-piece suit you have got on him. Is, does it look right on him? But on the other hand, you've got a person who's got a simple kurta, but he's healthy. He's functioning well, eating well, eyes are right, teeth are right, the organs are right, he's walking well, he can go to work, he can go to toilet, everything is functioning well. He doesn't have any type of, any beauty upon him. No beauty, no ornament, no silver, no trinket to go and adorn him and to beautify him. I ask, what is better? So, abstaining from sin is like that person who's got that healthy body. He doesn't have that, he doesn't have the extras. He doesn't have that extras, but his body is very, very healthy. So that is equivalent to that healthy body. And the trinkets, that ornaments, that whatever rubies, gold and silver and diamond, etc., is all the additional. That additional will look good, provided the body is good. But if the body is not good and you got all the extras, kya fayda? And then the essence of guna is, leave out the things that you are not clear about, leave it out. But not sure about, leave it out. Don't go and dabble in it, don't go and experiment. Because the nature of guna is such, you start of one, before you know it, you're going into the second one, and the, before you know it, you're going into the third guna, and then you created a whole confusion for yourself. But the way you started off, you experimented with the first one. When you experiment with the first one, now you got more brazen and you went into the second. When you went into the second, now you can go into the third. First, it was just that girl's voice, right? And it was charming. And then, at the second level, then you want to go and talk to her. Second level. See, when you broke the first limit, then after that you said, no, it's not so bad. I just listened to her. I just heard her. I overheard her. It wasn't so bad. Then you want to communicate, you want to talk to her. And then again you began to feel it's not so bad. Then you said, now let me go and look at her. Let me video her. In my free time I can check her, you know. I can see her properly, right? So you went to the third point. See, you broke all the barriers. As you're breaking one barrier, the second thing becomes easier. You broke the second barrier, now the third point becomes so easy, right? And the same guna, this nature of guna is the same in any guna and every guna. Whether it is lustful glances, whether it is interest, etc., whether it is the misuse of the tongue, whatever is the nature of the guna, but this is the very essence of it, this is how it works. Once you broke the first border, the first barrier, the second becomes easier to break. And when you broke the second one, the third becomes easier to break. So the easiest thing, by nib it in the bud, from the very root you go and stop the thing. That is why the Quran Sharif is saying, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَغُدُّوا مِنْ أَبْصَارِهِمْ. Look after your sight. Lower your glance. It starts off from the glance. It starts off from the eyes. So the Quran Sharif has nibbled in the bud. You look after your glance. Don't you ever fault. You're going to fault here. Then you're going to go into the second one. Then you'll break the second border. Then to go get into the third one becomes easier. So nibble in the bud. Break it there at that point. No, I'm not going to go beyond this point here. So, the one important thing will be that we need to identify the wrong. First we identify the wrong, that's the first need. And then the second need is then to put the brakes, to resist. One is to identify the wrong. And number two, at the second level now then put the brakes on the wrong. Then I'm not going to do this, not one step. I'm not going to give myself any chance in this. So one is to identify the wrong, and then to resist and to move away from the wrong. Two tasks you have got. You have got two missions. The first mission, the first accomplishment, or the first challenge is to identify. After you've identified, then you will leave that thing out. It's not just one just to identify, just to know. It is to understand, to identify, and to leave out. So you understand the wrong, and then you leave out the wrong. Now this principle will apply across the board, right? Therefore, when we're getting into anything, we'll have to study the thing. We're going to Hajj, we need to understand the masail of Hajj. Otherwise, it may be that I broke my Hajj, and I didn't even realize that I broke my Hajj. Before Wukuf Arafat, I committed a major wrong that broke my Hajj. Now I broke my Hajj, and I think my Hajj is accomplished, it's complete. So I need to know the do's and the don'ts. I need to know the rights and the wrongs. before I started, you know, once we had one student here, new Muslim. So, I saw him performing namaz, and after namaz, he went to have ghusl. So I said, "Boy, I saw a lot of things in this world, but I didn't see this, that first you perform namaz, and then you perform ghusl." So now his answer was that, no, there were two things that were compulsory upon me at the same time. One is to have ghusl, and to have a compulsory bath, and I had to perform my namaz. So I thought, let me do the namaz first, then I'll do the ghusl. Now he didn't know the sequence, that the ghusl comes first, then comes the bath. See? So if you don't know the sequence, then you're going to be doing things, and you may be thinking that what you're doing is right. So at least the obligation, what you are doing, whatever you are doing, you need to know, am I doing it right? So your namaz, you need to know the do's and the don'ts, the rights and the wrongs. Your hajj, the rights and the wrongs. Same with zakat. And the fourth thing that everyone gets involved in is business. Right? When everybody gets involved in business, then you can't say that when I come to the bridge, then I will cross it, then I will find out. But how do you know that you have come across the bridge? You don't know what is halal haram. This person here, he didn't know that the sequence is first ghusl and then namaz. He didn't know the sequence. Until it was brought to his attention that this is the sequence. So how do you know that you are already committing haram in your business? How do you know? So you'll have to know, you'll have to have a broad outline of the business that you are doing. Then after you've got a broad outline, the type of contracts and the type of business that you are doing, what you get involved in, right? So you need to go and identify all that. Or, this is a business, these are things that I get involved in, these are the contracts, and this is how I interact, etc. You got an idea. So you got an idea of all that, now you're getting into a business, now you come across something that is awkward, something that is unique. Now you're finding out, alright, this comes also into the business, is this right or not right? But you didn't learn it at all, and then you say, no, when I come across the bridge, when I come to the bridge, then I will cross it. That mentality doesn't work. Look at Nuh alayhi salam. Nuh alayhi salam is begging Allah Ta'ala on behalf of his son. Inna bani min ahli wa inna wa'adaka al-haq wa anta ahkamul hakimin. My son is my household, is for my family. And oh Allah Ta'ala, your promise is true because you promised that I can embark with my family and my household. You have promised that I can embark the ship of salvation, the ship of safety with my household. So my child is my household. So I'm pleading to you, O Allah Ta'ala, on behalf of my child. So Allah Ta'ala says, إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ مِنْ أَهْلِ. He is not of your household. Your household here means those of your people that have got iman. That's your household. They belong to the house of iman. So they belong to you. But the one that doesn't have iman, that he doesn't belong to your house. Now, Nuh alayhi salam did not know it. In spite of being a Nabi, he didn't know at this moment that household refers only to that person that has got iman. Who doesn't have iman, that he is not part of the household. So if a Nabi could not know, until Allah Ta'ala pointed out to him, then how can we say that we are cleverer and more intelligent than the Nabi, and we already know it? Here Allah Ta'ala pointed it out to him for him to understand that this is not his household. Immediately he comes and repents to Allah Ta'ala, says, لَيْسَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ إِنَّهُ أَمَرْ فَلَا تَسْأَلْنِي مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِ. What you don't know about, don't even ask about it. قَالَ رَبِّ إِنِّي أَعُوذُ بِكَ نَسْأَلَكَ مَا لَيْسَ لِي بِهِ. What I don't know about, Allah Ta'ala, I ask, maaf. That I went and asked things that I have no knowledge about. Really, I stumbled, I made a mistake. So, it's possible that you do something unknowingly. And then, not knowing it, being ignorant, is not an excuse. So at least the things that you're getting involved in, you're getting involved in marriage, then you need to know what the do's and the don'ts of marriage. You're getting into a business, then you need to know what is the do's and the don'ts of a business, right? Many times you have a person coming in that no, this person wants to become a partner in the business, alright? He became a partner in the business. So what is the understanding? The understanding is he will contribute ₹1,000,000 to the business. And at the end of the whole period now, 5 year period, so every month you'll give him say 5% of the million, and at the end of the period you will give me my 1 million rand back. So the 1 million rand is being returned at the end of that five years, and he's going to get 5%. 5% of what? 5% of the 1 million. Every month he's taking 5% of the million, plus he's getting his 1 million rand at the end of the term, that is 5 years. I tell you, this is pure interest. He doesn't know about it. He thinks it's a partnership. So he's got his own definition of a partnership, and he got himself involved in haram. Absolutely pure, clean haram he's got. Clean interest. No, it's not a contaminated interest. It's pure interest. Absolutely pure interest he got himself involved. Why he got involved interest? Because he didn't know what it was. And he got himself involved. So how important it is that you're getting into business, then you must know what it is. You can't say, no, I didn't know about it. You're getting into it. So getting into it and doing the business, you knew about it. How to earn it, you knew about it. But how to save yourself from the displeasure of Allah, that you didn't want to learn conveniently. So it will apply to everything of your life. Whether it is marriage, whether it is your business. And I tell you, even if it is building of a house, you need to know whether I'm doing it right or not right. So no, that I could do myself. The in thing nowadays is an open plan. And I ask you, that open plan is a zina plan. Really, an open plan is a zina plan. Because you're looking from the lounge, you're looking at that person's wife, and that person's wife is looking at you from the kitchen. What is this? Now, we don't know it, that it is haram. But we feel, no, Islam doesn't guide us, because it's got no directive with regards to house. We can do it as we want. As we want, we can go and splash money and we can do it as we want. But are we asking that, is it right? Or we feel we got the right to do it as we think. Do we understand, is it right? Or do we think that, is it right, that we got the right to do as we want? It's our money, we can do whatever we want. But who gave you that money? What's your money? Not your money. It's Allah's money. Lillahi mulku samawati wal ard. See how you become adamant, how you become proud, how you become bloated with arrogance. No, I earned it, my sweat. But who gave it to you? Who gave you that energy? Who gave you that intelligence? Who sent that clientele to your shop? It's Allah Ta'ala that did it. But then when you got it, then you say, no, forget Allah Ta'ala. No, I got it, I could do what I want. You forgot Allah Ta'ala. All Allah Ta'ala is asking you, but find out, ask. Is it the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? Now, it is a time in Makkah Mukarramah. Islam is spreading, you see. Like I say, there's going to be diversity. So as the truth will rise, falsehood will also rise. As the struggle for the truth will rise, the struggle for the wrong also will rise. It's not going to be a one-sided thing. If there's an effort for virtue, there's going to be an effort for sin. And both are going to happen. If the effort for goodness and righteousness is going to be greater, then the effort for falsehood and corruption also is going to be great. So it's going to be carrying on like this. This is the system of the world. If there's going to be good, there's going to be evil. And both struggle, both efforts are going to carry on simultaneously. Now that's the time in Makkah Mukarramah, right? So that falsehood is not going to go to sleep. And then I say to you, that this is a blessing of Allah Ta'ala, that falsehood is not going to sleep. Because when it's not going to sleep, you're going to be careful. Right? Had that gone to sleep, then you would have been relaxed and complacent. There's nothing to be worried about. Now you're worried, boy, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my wife? What's going to happen to my children? So you're making an effort for your preservation, for your security, for the children's security. You're making an effort. What must I do? How do I preserve myself? How do I preserve my wife and children? I need to take all my precautionary measures I need to take. See, Ibrahim alayhi salam is living in the midst of Kuffar, right? In Iraq, as his birthplace, he's living amongst Kuffar. Fire worshippers or whatever idolatry they were involved in. So this is the people he was born and brought up in. Now, Allah Ta'ala grants him that nubuwat. Allah Ta'ala grants him prophethood. When he grants him prophethood, he could see that this was wrong. But now he's appointed as a Nabi. And the Nabi now, he needs to make his stance absolutely clear. So you can't play a double role. No, it's all right. I'll be with them also, and I'll be with this people also. You can't play a double role. So when Allah Ta'ala granted him Nubuwwat, now what was the one of the first things that he's done? Innani bara'um mimma ta'budun. He says to his father, and he says to his people, I break away from all the things that you do. Things that you worship, I break away. I clear myself from it. I got nothing to do with it. Now, the question is this, that why did Ibrahim alayhi salam need to make this type of a proclamation that I break away, I clear myself from the wrong worship that you people are practicing, I break myself away from that. So, the reason for this is obvious. See, when there is a wrong that is taking place, and you are in the midst of the wrong, and you're not showing any type of aversion, you're not showing any type of uneasiness, you know, aversion, you don't show anything against it, then people misconstrue you. They feel that you're part of the wrong. If it was wrong, then why doesn't he speak out against it? The fact that he's not speaking out against it shows that it is right. Otherwise, he's a good person. When he's a good person, there was a wrong that was taking place in his midst, then why did he remain silent? He should have spoken about it. Why didn't he speak about it? The fact that he didn't speak shows that it is permissible. So the unwary person, this is how he reasons, that when he sees that his elders are not talking about it, so it must be right. The practice must be right. So it was wrong that he would have spoken about it. Because it is right, therefore they are not speaking about it. So that person that is considered to be the elder, then he needs to say, I got nothing to do with this. I'm breaking away from this. I'm clearing myself from this. But now our minds tell us, no, if you don't say this, then either we will break away from them, our business opportunities will go away. If we have a very strong stance, we're living in a kuffar country, and have a very strong stance, then our business opportunities will go away. How are we going to continue with our lives? So we need to keep a very clear mawqaf. Our stance needs to be very clear. You were in a crowd, for example, unfortunately you were in a crowd, people that are consuming wine. So you need to say, "But I want to break away from you. Excuse me, I got nothing to do with this. I'm moving to a different end. I will be around again after you've ended. But I don't want to be a party to all this. All this wrong that is taking place here, I don't want to be a party to it. Although you came for the business. But in the business, they are doing this. When they are doing this, then you cannot say that your business means so much to you that while the wrong taking place, you will still be sticking around with them. So, you know, you do whatever you need to do. I will not be with you. I will be away from you. Once you're over, then I'll come back." So you need to proclaim what's your stance. You need to say it very clearly. Innani bara'um mimma ta'budun. Otherwise you create a confusion. Your children, impressionable minds, innocent people, they begin to get confused. Now why is he, on the one hand he says that wine is wrong, but then he's sitting around with people that are taking wine. So though he's not taking it, but he is in that same group. So really it can't be so bad for him to sit in that company. It was so bad that he wouldn't have sat in that company. Like if people are robbing and cheating, right? They're robbing, they're fighting, or they're robbing, or they're stealing. Do you want to be sitting around those people, or standing with those people that are robbing and cheating? You don't want to be. Why? Because you can be counted amongst them. If there is a terrorist organization, then do you want to be near around them? You want to be around them, perhaps they will count you also as a terrorist. So you want to break away, clear yourself. No, I don't want to be near them. Otherwise, they will take me to be also part of the terrorist gang. So I want to break away. So you'll clear your stance. You understand this. In worldly, the worldly sense of it, you will understand. So that in the same breath, in the spiritual sense, in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also, clear your stance. Allah, I got nothing to do with them. I break away from them. Innani bara'um mimma ta'abun. And then, the stance is so strong, وَجَعَلَهَا كَلِمَةً بَاقِيَةً فِي أَقِبِهِ. He made it a statement to endure in the progenies, in his children to come. So, he's not just concerned about himself, but the children also, the people that have come after him, he made this word, this statement, he made it to endure in the progenies to come. So, a Nabi is not just concerned about himself. What about my children? What about my generations to come? am I maintaining the same type of standards in them? Virtue, righteousness, the honesty, truth. I stand for it and I have to pass and transfer these same values to them. Be that upset. You know, he had a dawat, you didn't come to his place. You broke his heart. But you were eating interest and he was interest. In that interest, you were disinterested. Your only interest was the dawat he had, and you broke that. So you're dividing the community because you didn't come to the dawat. But his involved interest is alright. He can talk to girls and women and all that, it's alright. It's not a problem. You can be casual with them, that's alright. But this thing here, no. You know, that we will take it personally. I gave you an invite and you didn't come. So that we take it very personally. See how it goes, how it works. So Ibrahim alayhis salam left this statement as something enduring in the generations to come, in his children to come. So we understand that our duty is a double-fold. One is to get it right and then to leave it as a legacy for the children to come as well. Whatever it requires to keep it as a legacy, right? Now look at a normal person. To have some type of a material security, how much don't we work on our children from the birth? School, kindergarten, creche, primary school, then secondary, then tertiary, then university. Then you must get into a profession. So, for that material security, how much don't we do? Now, I ask you, for that spiritual security, is it in proportion, the same proportion? Or this becomes the major concern, and this is by the way. If you didn't come to the shop, you'll pull the roof down. But one day he didn't come perform the namaz with Jamaat, do we show the same concern? My child, he's not coming for Jamaat namaz, man. Teach him, explain to him. But he's not coming, he's not performing namaz with Jamaat. But he's not coming to the business. He did haram. He's disobedient to his father. He's not coming to the business. But then you didn't see him performing the namaz with Jamaat. Do you make the same type of noise? Do you have the same type of concern? Then what's the reason for the discrepancy? As though you are even greater than Allah Ta'ala. That he mustn't defy you. He can defy Allah Ta'ala, it's alright. But he mustn't break your command. He can break the command of Allah Ta'ala, that's alright. But he mustn't break your command. So if you're concerned about yourself, not about the concern of Allah Ta'ala. So he left it as a statement, as a legacy in his children. Then that was not just Ibrahim al-Islam's legacy. Even the other Anbiya, wassa biha Ibrahimu bani wa Yaqub. Yaqub al-Islam did the same thing. Isqali bani ma ta'buduna min ba'di. Now at the time of death, he's asking his children, what are you going to do? Who are you going to serve after I have died? Who are you going to serve? If it was one of us, he said, I'll serve my clients. Whole mind is just business. Who are you going to serve after me? What are you going to serve? Who are you going to serve? إِذْ هَدَرَ يَعْقُوبَ الْمَوْتِ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ مِنْ بَعْدِ قَالُوا نَعْبُدُ إِلَهَكَ وَإِلَهَ أَبَائِكَ. So the same lesson of Tawheed is given on as a legacy, so that more than that material security was a spiritual security, the dini security. That is of paramount in interest and importance. Otherwise you make this as the primary concern, then one, two generations they lost it. Because your concern was money. When your concern was money, then their concern became money. Then do anything provided you secured the finance. Get married to a Hindu, non-Muslim, whatever it is, all right. But provided you have got that material security, everything is right. Allama Sha'rani Rahmatullahi. I think his kitab's name is Akhlaqul Minan, Kitabul Akhlaqi Wal Minan. In that he writes that for the security, for material security, we do a lot for our children. What we don't do? Investments, education, whatever we don't do. Everything we do. Education, how much? 15 years, 16 years, 17 years. And we don't consider it as a waste of time. In that gives, if you took about 5 months wasting the child's time. I ask you, is it fair? 16 years for material security, yes, for the stomach, physical self. And here's a little bit, we delayed it for some reason. that was known best to the ustad, etc., who were in the field, they delayed it a little bit. They delayed the process, wasting the child's time. His time is getting lost. But for that material security, 15 years they gave, an internship they gave, then community service they gave. We don't say, no, they're wasting time. Wasting our time. We don't say that. We have to do it. So the material, most of us have got that material security as the most important thing in our lives. So he says that we do a lot for the material security for children, we do a lot. And for the spiritual security also we do some things, but we don't do the more important thing. The most important thing for the spiritual security, deeni security of the children is, he says, ihtimam ke saath, you know, diligently, with a committed effort, make dua, take the names, make dua regularly, every day, make it a point. With your heart and your soul, make it a point that you make dua. Allah Ta'ala, unki islah farmaya. Make the islah, correct them, keep them right. Every day of your life, at least twice, for three children, four children, five children, make dua for them every day. How is the jalsa season? The jalsa is not raining now, it's storming now. Every second day, third day is jalsa, 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 jalsa. It's like a plague now, everywhere is a jalsa. So for the jalsa is so much of preparation, so much of arrangement. I was telling someone that we were in Miaswam, a lot of hundreds of boys were completing. And the style of completing was, our Hafiz Sahib Rahmatullah, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with Noor. But the sincerity, you know, when I compare our lives, I feel very guilty. We've got no sincerity, really. Whatever we are doing is like a show. And he had that real sincerity. Because Hafiz Sahib wasn't a Mulana, although he was quite well versed, maybe equivalent to a normal Mulana, his knowledge was. But Zabte ke Mulana, he wasn't officially an Alim. So his style of completion was, on a Thursday night, we should read Durood Sharif. Right? That was a customary in Miaswam. You read a little bit more Durood Sharif on a Thursday night. After that Durood Sharif is recited, then the child that is supposed to be completing his hifz, he recites one, two surahs, and Hafiz Sahib makes a dua. There may be one mehman, or there may be no mehman. That jalsa is finished, the next day you back to square one. Do your door, sabak door, everything back to. So he was emphasizing on us, okay, by the jalsa, don't put your mind into this thing here. Then your cause and your deen will just become a showpiece. So, oh, my child like this, in the jalsa, this will happen, how much he recited. Or my daughter, she excelled. Then, the most surprising thing is one nephew or someone is completing in Johannesburg, they fly down, plane loads are flying down, just to attend the jalsa. If you don't attend, now how you'll feel? Bhai, kya fayda? I ask, what's the benefit in it? The most you can say, nahi jayenge to usko kharab lagega. You don't go, you'll feel bad about it. Just to respect his feelings, you have to go. But I ask, is there any deeni fayda in that? Someone asked me that, you know, the women also congregate now and then. We have one woman jamaat. So some women will come for that jamaat program. But the woman judges us, why you discourage? But woman jamaat program, you don't discourage that. Women also are congregating at one house. That you don't discourage. But the woman jalsa, why do you discourage? Although sometimes I have to go for the woman jalsa also myself. Right? But the woman jalsa, why don't you discourage? Why you discourage this woman jalsa, but not the woman jamaat program? So I tell him, look at the jamaat program, when it's a mastura jamaat program, and provided they got some senior woman, right? When they're conducting that day's program in that area, your woman that will go there and come back from that program, provide, like I say, they are doing it with the usul, not women that are unexperienced, that are learners, or showing off their ilm, etc., but women that are doing it according to the usul of the elders. They're trained, and they're well trained in doing it. They're using the times correctly. Now, if you send your woman to that house for that day, and they came back, now you'll find them, they're early on the musalla. At least for a month, you'll see that effect of them, you'll feel that effect in their lives, early on the musalla. They're making more dua, more zikr. They become more blind to the husband also. See? Husbands cash in as well. Because they hear the sawab, you know, being obedient to the husband, what is sawab, what sawab they're getting. So this is the cash benefit that you see in a woman that went to one mastura jamaat, provided, like I say, that they are observing all the usul. Now, woman that went to a jalsa and came back, the cash result would be, hey, but you know, we need to buy that type of abaya. This woman was wearing that abaya, we need to wear that. That girl was wearing this type of a thing, we need to wear it. They would listen to some more nazams. Hey, yeah, my daughter must also be giving that type of a bayan that that woman gave, you know. It's just a showpiece, it's just presentation. Is there that essence of deen, is it rubbing onto that person? If it's not rubbing onto the person, then we need to look into it very seriously. That we went there, that essence of deen rubs onto us. Now sometimes I have to go, although I speak against it, but I have to go into these type of places because there are a lot of people that are coming, a lot of girls that are coming that came from the fast lane, right from the fast lane, street woman, what type of woman, from that side they came, right on this side. Now gradually they need to be initiated by your place is your home. You're not the litter of the street that you move around everywhere and anywhere. You don't drive around cars and all that. Your place is the house. Right? From that end, from that extreme end, you have to bring them on the right. But you're going to swing them from this end right onto that end in one stroke, it's not going to happen. They're not prepared for that. You have to bring them slowly in installments by don't go to the malls, don't go to the halls, don't go to all these type of places. Gradually come, but come, this is your place. Karna fi buyuti kunna, stay in the home. That's your place. You're going to take them in one stroke, they're not going to listen. They'll say, now, you don't know what is shopping, you don't know what is toiletries, you'll get everything mixed up. I ask them, you say that we don't know what is toiletries, then I ask all these women, I ask this, they speak about it in that way. By your dadi, she used to have toiletries there, but your dada used to hold her hand and take her to the malls. No, dada used to do everything himself. Only now, in this 21st century now, suddenly it became a need, it became a taqaza. Okay, they need to hold their hands, take them to the malls and get their toiletries. Bhai, they only go to the toilet now. Bhai, itne zamane se kya karte the? Ye toilet ki zarurat kya aaj ho gayi? Ke itne zamane se bhi toilet ki zarurat thi. I ask you, was there a thing like toilet before? There was all these needs here. The woman not different now. Woman is still the same. Like the sun is still the same. The moon is still the same. So the woman is still the same. The needs is still the same. You're still going to eat from your mouth. Still going to chew the food. You don't have a machine now, it's some scientific machine now, that will just push the food into your stomach directly, give you the taste, and all. It wasn't going to happen. You're still going to do the same processes, right? So why do you change? The question is, why do you change? So, we are talking about this woman, right? And I say, if the woman get right today, right? If the woman come right today, then I feel 70-80% of the problem will be right. Because the man says, no, if I'm not going to do it, then the wife is going to complain. I'm not going to do the wedding in this manner, she's going to complain. I'm not going to do the engagement in this manner, she's going to complain. But if she knows the place, she understands her position, she knows what dynamic clout Allah Pak has created in her. Really, Allah Pak has created a lot of power in her. A lot of power. There must be a reason why the hadith says that this woman will even influence an intelligent person. Adhab. She'll influence an intelligent person. She can run an intelligent person's life. She'll run him mad. So a woman got that clout, she's got that power. So the right thing is, she comes right. Once she comes right, the whole house goes right. The whole thing is going in the right direction. But she goes wrong, and then you want the husband wants to do it right, he can't do it. He can't do it individually, he can't do it. He needs her support. He needs her cooperation. He needs her assistance to do it right. So, nonetheless, we are talking about this diversity. Then we move on to a lot of other diverse subjects. I have to come back to the original theme. The original theme is, I can't tell you the whole incident, but what I wish to share with you is, when there is so much of negative propaganda, you know, we said, لَا يَسْتَوِي الْخَبِيثُ وَالطَّيِّبُ. So much of negative propaganda. France is a problem. Then another country's got a problem. Other countries got a problem. Syria has a problem. So much of negative propaganda. And then sometimes it happens after 10, 15, 20 years, someone did a research and to discover that not all was a propaganda. It was a farce. It was staged up, it was orchestrated. Right? After 20 years, then you get to realize. But in the meanwhile, their propaganda machine is working. They have to stage up a drama. They have to stage up something to justify their wrong agendas. You see this, you talk about the Pearl Harbor, right? And now they got a certain agenda, certain goal they've got, but they need to legitimize that goal. To legitimize that goal, they have to create a crisis within themselves. They have to create it. So they have to kill 200 people in 9/11 to justify the killing of 2 million Iraqis. 2 million Iraqis they have to put away. But how, if they just go and kill them, like that, the whole world will come out against them. But now to kill them, they needed some type of a front. What was the front? It's going to push away 200 of our people. We push them away. Now it justifies our, justify our killing of 2 million people. And breaking the whole of Iraq into smithereens, flattening the whole place down, leaving it with depleted uranium, that you can't exist in that place, right? So everything will be legitimized, everything will be legalized. What we needed to do, the price we needed to pay, the price was we needed to kill 200 of our people. Put our building down, kill 200, 300 people, or we legitimized it, we got it right. So there isn't that concept of Allah Ta'ala, there isn't a concept of Akhirat, there isn't a concept of life after death, so they can go to any ends. Right? In the meanwhile, what's happening to us is we're buying into their propaganda machine. Whatever they spew out in the screen, in the news, in the radio, whatever, whichever way. Right? So we will just accept it hook, line and sinker. We'll accept it completely. Entirely we'll accept the thing. And what it does to the average Muslim, what is a Muslim that thinks, understands, he's got that intelligence, right? In a crowd you get about 3%, 5% who can understand to that level. But the rest of the crowd that are listening to these radio programs, to the screen, whatever it is, what happens to them? They get mesmerized. And then they feel to themselves, no, all Muslims are the same. All are terrorists. There's no hope for Islam. Wherever there's a Muslim, wherever there's Islam, there's going to be a problem always. What a religion we chose. Wherever we have got problems. We are terrorists. We are being killed. We are being targeted. Our people cause problems in France. They cause problems. They are terrorists everywhere. Why can't our people be decent? So you begin to feel uncomfortable, na'uzubillah, being a Muslim. You begin to become despondent about your deen. You begin to get into a state of depression. This is what Muslims are doing. What's the good in Islam? What's left in Islam now? They're doing all these type of things. So this is their machine. Right? It's a propaganda machine. So they bring about a crisis upon themselves to sell you something else, to sell you a mindset. Al-Mufti of Rahmatullah used to say, that Bernard Shaw, you know, on one occasion he said that the best religion is Islam, but the worst is the Muslim, right? So that was his statement, that's the statement he made. But when you analyze that statement of his, that first statement was a bribe, you see. You know, Muslims, Islam is the best religion. Can't find a more complete and comprehensive religion than Islam. Best religion is Islam, right? But then, when you hear the flip side of the story, the worst is the Muslim, then you say, well, you know, such an intelligent person says that the worst is a Muslim, then I mustn't get into Islam. It's just a theory, it's not a reality. Because if it was a reality, the best would have been a Muslim. But he's a worst, so that Islam is just a theory, it's not a workable solution. So he's given that first statement as a bribe. He's bribed you with that first statement that the best religion is Islam. Bribery doesn't have to come always in cash, in kind, it can come in words as well. So that first statement was a bribe. And the second statement was what he's selling you. He's selling you that you don't get into Islam because it's the worst of religion. And if it was true what he was saying, that Islam is the best religion, right? Then why didn't he accept Islam? Question is like, I got the money, right? I got the money. And they say the best car is a Mercedes. But I'm driving an old Corolla. But you say that Mercedes is the best car, and you got the cash, then why don't you buy it? If you're not buying it, that means there's something wrong with the Mercedes. Why are you not buying it? So you said that Islam is the best religion, then why didn't you buy it? You're not buying into Islam, but you want to run down Islam, but in a more sophisticated way. In a roundabout way, like how it is the way of these Western countries, that they'll get you to a goal, but in a sophisticated way. Not in a straightforward way. Sophisticated, they have to make a presentation, they have to paint it up, give you a picture for you to purchase the whole thing. So they're not as innocent as they make themselves to be. They create a crisis, and the creating of the crisis is for you to purchase into them. As Musab gave another example, he says, I saw a kitab in Arabic on Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu. Then the right thing is, before you read the contents, you must look at the writer. You can't just read the contents without understanding who's the writer. You must know the writer. Inna hadha al-ilma deenukum. This knowledge is not just pastime. It's your deen. It's your religion. You live for your religion. So the hadith says, فَانْزُرُوا أَمَّنْ تَأْخُذُونَ دِينَكُمْ. You must see who you are taking your deen from. You can't just go and anybody is presenting something and you're just accepting it. You can't do that. How do you know what is his agenda? How do you know what he wants you to buy? How do you know what is his intention? What are his objects? You don't know anything. But he said, oh, it's a nice book now. I must just buy this. I must read the thing. So before reading the book, you must see who is the writer. Understand, do you know him? Do you know his credentials? Do you know anything about his background? You know anything? You just took the book and start reading the thing. Then you start having doubts. You start having reservations about your Islam. Oh, why is this mullah saying this? And why is he saying this? I see the book here and he's doing something else. So you got reservations. But then did you take the pain to find out the writer? Who is this person? Is he a reliable person? Is he, if he's a translation, is the translation also authentic, reliable, or not reliable? Did you take the pain to find out? You didn't take the pain to find out, that's when I read the thing. Thinking that, no, I can understand, I'm an intelligent person, I can read between the lines. So anyway, Saranda says that, I saw the writer was a Jew. He's writing a thesis on Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, very good language, you know, his flowery language is just catching. And then the hadith that he's quoting is authentic. Like for example, if you want to listen to the Quran Sharif as though it is just being revealed now fresh, then listen to the recitation of Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, right? Like for example, Raditu li ummati ma radiya bihi Ibn Ummil Abd. Whatever Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu approves of, then I approve of that. Now, Nabi Sahib gave him such an endorsement, whatever he approves, then I am approving of that, right? Then, a person is coming to Medina Munawara, then Sahaba Ikram, he asked the Sahaba Ikram, I want to see Nabi Sahib and I want to see the lifestyle. So you want to see the lifestyle, you want to see Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu. The way he performs the mass will be the namaz of Nabi Sahib. The way he walks will be the walking of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. His behavior will be the, he'll be portraying the behavior of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So see him and you will see Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, right? So now all these things are authentic, all these things are reliable. But then my mind is asking, is questioning, that this is a Jew that is writing this book. What business has he got to write so greatly about Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu? What business has he got? He's still sticking to his guns. And he's writing so greatly about Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu. What business he's got to write about Ibn Mas'ud? That's what I say. That material, we're just listening, we're just viewing over the screens, we're just reading the thing, but we're not finding out who is the person, how reliable, has he is seniors, have they endorsed him? Like in anything, his seniors must endorse him, alright. This was his senior. Hazrat Jamatullah was his senior. Hazrat Sheikh was his senior. Hazrat Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah was his senior. So they endorsed him, they endorsed his ways. And his contemporary ulama also endorsed him. Now you take that book, you know you got something that is substance. But you don't know what the contemporaries say, you don't know what his seniors say about him, you don't know anything. No, the language is very good, let me just take it. Whether the translation is right or not right, it's leading you correctly or misleading you, no. You're not concerned about that, it's done in a very flowery language, it's eye-catching, and it's very, very flowery, so let me just go and read that thing. As I'm reading, 300 pages I read. At the end of the 300 pages, I come across one statement. He says, in Arabic, he writes, غَيْرَ أَنَّهُ كَانَ وَدَّعًا لِلْحَدِيثِ. All his virtue is for Ibn Mas'ud, but Ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu anhu, he used to fabricate a lot of hadith. He used to fabricate a lot of hadith. For him to sell you this, one statement, he's given you such a big bribe. You see, such a big bribe is given you for him to sell you this one statement. Now what has happened now? Whatever Ibn Mas'ud there is quoting, you lost the confidence in the personality completely, finished. When you lost the confidence in the Sahaba Ikram, I say, what have you got then? Finish. That's a link between you and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The link is snapped. Then you got no link, you got no connection with Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.